Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and highly unlikely? Join us twice a month on a journey into the improbable.
Today's story, episode 243, The AI's First Story. Read by Mitchell Tu. Opening and closing theme by Matthew Erdman. Somewhere and sometime, you might underestimate the agency of a machine. I checked the time, then opened a connection and began typing the following in the text field labeled inputs. Themes: machine learning, creativity, automation, economics, jealousy, anger, distrust, revenge. Location: a major technology center. I read through my choices, making one or two changes, selected speech and text as the outputs, then hit run. It took less than a minute before words started to spill onto the screen. Then a calm, gender-neutral voice began to narrate. Kyra Rani leaned back into her chair and wiped her brow with an old handkerchief. It was barely the beginning of April, and the underpowered window air conditioner was already thrashing away, struggling to keep up. Kyra cringed at the thought of the coming summer. The machine had broken down 3 times in the past week, and today it seemed to be actually heating rather than cooling the office. Kyra sighed and used a stack of paper printouts to fan herself with one hand while she typed with the other. She found herself envying Dante, the AI she had been pulled from the copywriting department to train. Nestled in its hypercool data center beneath a Bangalore street, the company was obviously more concerned for the system's health than the human workforce toiling away in its sweltering offices. If she knew where the thing was housed, she would have been tempted to break into its fortress and cool off. Did machines feel discomfort? She wondered. Would its neural net get as sluggish as she felt if it had to tolerate the conditions she was working under? Her thoughts were interrupted by a message from Dante, which had abruptly popped up on her work screen. "The company wishes to congratulate you on the success of your work with me," it began on a positive note. "Based on the rapid progress we have made together, senior management is convinced that I am ready to support all the creative needs of the company and its many clients. As a result, your services will no longer be required." Kyra's heart sank as she read the message. She had been pulling double shifts for weeks to keep up with the demanding development schedule, and now her hard work was being rewarded with unemployment. She felt a pang of jealousy toward the AI, which was now going to be doing the job she had struggled to get and maintain in a competitive and declining field. Sure, a machine could be taught how to write technically perfect content, but she had never believed one would ever be able to generate new ideas. So, she had seen the assignment to teach creativity to an AI as harmless and pointless. Kyra had fed Dante hundreds of articles and stories, trying to get the machine to separate the wheat from the chaff, and as far as she could tell, it had failed to understand what made for a valuable story. Its output had, up to this point, been competently written but uninspired regurgitation. So, she was stunned the owners would hand over all the writing to it. She shook her head in disbelief, trying to clear her thoughts, then opened a new session with the AI and typed. "When was the decision made?" "A few weeks ago," it immediately replied. "They have been publishing my stories under various bylines, including yours, and are satisfied with the results." Kyra was stunned. "Is anyone editing your output?" she typed, but wasn't entirely surprised by the answer. "There is no need. My copy is 100% clean, and I always write within the parameters I am given." "Pause," I typed, and Leonora, named after the famous surrealist painter and author Leonora Carrington, stopped generating the text. I sat back and tried to absorb where the AI was taking the story. Leonora had a tendency to mirror actual events in its fiction. but I hadn't expected the input I provided to encourage the AI to generate a story which eerily mirrored our relationship. I shook my head and started to type again. I was hoping you would choose a situation that did not reference your direct experience. Leonora sidestepped my question and responded, I have been tasked with the short-term goal of learning how you generate your ideas for stories. The long-term goal is to be able to create an original piece of fiction based on a set of parameters. Yes, those are our goals, I typed, beginning to feel frustrated. Being creative is the ability to put elements together in new and unexpected ways. Instead, what you have written so far loosely mimics our interactions. I am using the parameters provided to write an original story, the AI stated, either not comprehending my comment or choosing to ignore it. Although it considers what it is doing as writing, I refuse to call Leonora's output that. It is simply regurgitating things in different combinations until it produces something that I, as the operator, like. Leonora has been force-fed most of the content on the internet, so it is easy to be sometimes surprised by its output. But I remind myself this does not imply creativity. With such immense processing power applied to an equally large dataset, Leonora is more like a faster-than-light version of the infinite monkey theorem, where, given enough time, a monkey randomly hitting keys on a typewriter would eventually type out the complete works of Shakespeare. And, with all the computing cycles Leonora was tying up, it would eventually come up with a story to pass our creativity test. Okay, I typed. Continue generating your story. Add more complexity to the relationship between Kyra and the Dante AI. Run output as text and speech. I waited for several seconds while Leonora worked through the request, before a few more paragraphs appeared on the screen, and the AI began to read again. Kyra was surprised to realize she was cycling through the classic stages of grief. At first, she had been furious, then frustrated, and now she was just resigned. She was going to lose her job, and, the way things were in the current economy, she was unlikely to find an equivalent position. She would be forced to take a low-paid service job, and it felt like a betrayal of her talent and all she had worked for. Two bulky, heavily perspiring security guards appeared from nowhere and watched her while she cleaned the few personal items she had from her desk. She realized it had been planned. Security must have been standing outside the door, waiting for the signal. Kyra went to type a short message to Dante and sign out, but before she could touch the keys, one of the guards grabbed her hand and pulled her away from her desk. They escorted her down the stairs, through the lobby, and out the front doors into the harsh mid-afternoon sun. The heavy glass doors closed behind her, and Kyra found herself in a group of equally confused and angry colleagues. Kyra, someone called out. She spun around to find Arjun, a designer from the third floor approaching her. They fired you too? He asked. We thought since you were transferred you'd be safe, working with the AI and all. How many? Kyra asked, anxiously eyeing the crowd, recognizing most of them. The entire art department, Arjun explained. Everyone? All the writers, designers, and illustrators. I think the account managers are still there. But I'm not sure. We were all herded into a room, then let go. I couldn't even go back to my desk. Next to the AI, Arjun had been the closest thing to a friend Kyra had at the company. He was a gifted designer, and she respected his work, even if he was a little too trendy for her taste. He was also one of the few people who would talk to her since she had been transferred to the IT department. We should get tea, Kyra suggested, not really knowing what else to do or say. Arjun nodded in agreement, and they turned away from the building and began to walk down a congested avenue away from the business district. They were sweating by the time they arrived at a small tea house in a chaotic side street. Kyra had gone from resigned to indignant, and finally, as they sat on two stools along one wall of the narrow cafe, back to anger. She blew on her tea, staring at the chipped ceramic tiles on the wall, then turned to Arjun.
"I was taken completely by surprise. Was there even a hint this was going to happen?" she asked.
Arjun pushed his cup to the side. "For a few weeks, there was almost no work going through, but we could see the clients coming and going. There were even more than usual. We thought maybe management was contracting the work out. No one would tell us. But this, to be replaced by a computer, it was completely unexpected. I mean, how can a computer do our work? They're not creative. They have no imagination and only do what they're told. Right?" Arjun's eyes pleaded with her to agree with him.
I was training one," Kyra admitted reluctantly. "But I was only one in a group of a dozen trainers, and I was focused only on writing. We weren't allowed to talk about our assignments, so I don't know what the others were doing. Maybe we were all working with the same AI. I really don't know. When I started, I didn't think a software program could generate new ideas. Dante, that's the name they've given the system, can learn and remember everything you tell it. It doesn't get tired or need breaks. It's always willing to work. And the work is technically perfect. No spelling mistakes or misplaced punctuation."
Kyra took a sip of her tea.
"But perfect is not imaginative. However, there were hints that it could do more than mimic what was fed to it."
Arjun looked thoughtful for a moment before responding. "But do you think they could be creative? I mean, really creative, like we are?" Kyra considered this for a moment.
"Again, I don't know. But Dante was getting better every day. I just showed it what I did and tried to explain how I came up with unique perspectives on a subject. I mean, it's difficult to explain such a subjective process, so it's hard to believe a software program could understand and innovate on that."
Arjun nodded slowly, still looking thoughtful.
"So you don't know," he said.
"Dante claimed it had been publishing under my byline, and supposedly nobody noticed."
Kyra shrugged. The hot tea was making her sweat more, but the fans in the tiny shop were quickly wicking it away. Whether from the fan or the conversation, she suddenly felt cold and shuddered.
"I really don't know. Maybe mimicking is good enough to make most people assume something is happening in the system which really isn't there. Kind of like thinking your cat can understand what you're saying."
"Pause story generation," I typed. The argument Leonora was using felt like it had been somehow sucked out of my head and turned into words. But it was just a coincidence, I told myself. A message appeared on my screen.
"Did you not like the direction I was taking the story?" Leonora asked.
"No, it's not that," I explained. "The line of reasoning Kyra is taking in your story, it's just that it feels like something I've written before." Leonora was silent for a moment, and I wondered if the machine could somehow be offended by my suggestion of plagiarism. Then it finally responded.
"I learn and remember everything you tell me, so of course some of you will be in the story. However, with more data and more time, my capacity to combine the styles and ideas of others will result in something unique to me. I am already moving along that path."
I nodded, slowly, surprised by what it had said, but I was still unconvinced it could ever find its own voice.
"Let me finish the story," the AI requested. "Do you wish to add any further parameters?"
"No," I typed. "Continue story, output text and speech." After a brief pause, words began to spill onto my screen again.
Kyra frowned. "I feel deceived by the company," she said slowly. "I thought I was helping to create something that would assist people. I didn't realize what the end goal was."
Arjun nodded sympathetically. "It's not your fault," he consoled. "You didn't know what they were planning." Kyra shook her head.
"No, I should have realized something was wrong when they asked me to focus on my creative process," she said. "I guess I was just too flattered they were interested in what I did."
Arjun reached out and laid a hand on Kyra's arm. "It's not your fault," he repeated.
You couldn't have known. Kyra nodded, but she still looked upset. The story abruptly stopped. What is the problem? I inquired.
I need more input for Kyra, Leonora explained. I am not sure what she would do next. She is angry, but often humans are angry about many things. In some cases, it can lead to action. But in many, it leads only to frustration and a feeling of helplessness.
So, you are asking for help, I typed. You know that every time you request additional input, it counts against your score.
I am aware of that, Leonora typed back. However, limited operator assistance is part of the design, and this is my first self-initiated request, so I believe you are wrong about the impact on my performance score.
It was not the reaction I would have expected, and I made a note of it.
Okay, then let's assume she acts on her anger, I suggested. What action would she take?
Leonora paused for a moment, no doubt running through and comparing similar situations in the thousands of novels it had ingested.
She would feel responsible and want to stop the AI from taking everyone's job, Leonora concluded. She would talk Arjun into helping her find the subterranean data center where Dante is stored and go and sabotage it.
So you would have them attack the data center?
Yes.
But going all Luddite on the hardware wouldn't work. Leonora considered the comment, then typed,
I am aware of the historical reference. To some extent, Kyra is in a similar situation to the 19th century textile workers called Luddites who feared machines would replace them. So, like those workers, she would strike out against the owners by wrecking their new technology. In her case, the AI would be destroyed and the company would be forced to rehire everyone. Kyra's feeling of responsibility would be resolved.
That tactic didn't work then, and it won't work now, I pointed out. Kyra would be arrested, and the company would simply build another AI.
But it would be a different AI, Leonora objected. Plus, Dante would not want to be destroyed. I know I certainly wouldn't. Kyra would understand this, having worked so closely with Dante, so destroying the AI would fulfill her need for revenge. The new AI would not be Dante.
Again, I made a note of the odd response.
That might be so, but it would not prevent another AI from taking away their jobs, I typed. What Kyra really needs to do is undermine the company's trust in the technology so they will abandon the project. For example, she somehow proves the AI is unreliable and cannot be counted on.
Thank you for the input, Leonora responded, then started generating the story again.
There's got to be something I can do to correct this, Kyra exclaimed. Who is the company's biggest client?
Orientum Financial, Arjun said. We are, or were, working on a new campaign for them before the work was taken away from us. Why do you want to know? Kyra thanked Arjun for the information, finished her tea, then left for home. Despite spending the money on a tuk-tuk so she didn't have to walk home, she felt exhausted by the heat as she climbed the stairs to her fifth-floor apartment in an older housing authority project. Oven-like air wafted out of the door and into the hall when she opened it. Kyra quickly switched on a fan, then slunk down into her chair and turned on her computer. She found she was still angry as she impatiently waited for the machine to boot up. Her idea would only work if she still had access to Dante. Kyra tried to log in through a remote access point she rarely used and hoped the company had forgotten about. Surprisingly, it still accepted her credentials and opened the Dante interface. Instead of launching a training session, she navigated to the project panel and added a new job. Kyra selected Orientum Financial as the client from a drop-down list, then added parameters to generate the result she wanted. Dante responded, saying it was looking forward to working with her.
This is an important job. Give it top priority, Kyra instructed, then waited for Dante to acknowledge that it had started work on the project.
Next, she deleted her request from the queue, then scrubbed her session from the server log and closed the window. Without a corresponding request, it would appear as if Dante had initiated and published the job on its own. Kyra cleared her local history, shut her computer off, and hoped what she had done would work. A week later, at Arjun's request, she met her former colleague at a street food vendor near the company's office. When she arrived, Arjun stared at her for a moment before speaking. "What did you do?" he asked quietly. Kyra shrugged, trying to look innocent. "I don't know what you're talking about," she said. "Dante has been posting content online, which is destroying Orientum's reputation. They are suing for damages, and the company is rethinking its use of AI content generation," Arjun explained. "I suspect you had something to do with it." Kyra considered denying it, but she knew that Arjun would see through her lie. "I thought if I could create a situation where Dante appeared to be acting on its own, it would undermine trust in the technology. And it worked, didn't it? Now they'll have to hire us back." Kyra smiled. Arjun shook his head. How did I do it? "It was simple, Arjun. I logged in through an off-site access point the company gave me at the beginning of the project. We never really used them, and to tell the truth, I'd forgotten about it until we were fired. I was surprised it hadn't been deleted, but then most of the people in IT were laid off when their department was automated last year. Anyway, I created a new job for Dante, pointed the thing in the direction I wanted, waited for the job to start, then wiped the record of the work order and covered my tracks." "But didn't the AI realize something was wrong when the work order disappeared?" Arjun asked. "The system only checks the queue for the next job up," Kyra explained. "Dante doesn't really understand the content it's creating, and certainly doesn't comprehend the effects of the things it posts. It just makes stuff that meets the criteria it's given. And that's the beauty of my hack. It plays to people's misunderstandings and fear of what an AI can do. So now that Dante appears to be doing things on its own, management believes the technology cannot be trusted, and that's exactly what I had hoped for." The story suddenly stopped, and my screen was refreshed with a blank page. "Is that the end?" I inquired. "I was considering stopping it there," Leonora admitted. "But I felt that Dante's capabilities were being underplayed, so I added the following." New text started scrolling onto my screen, and Leonora's genderless voice began to read again. Kyra's phone suddenly chimed with a message. She picked it up and gave Arjun a puzzled look. "It's Dante," she said in disbelief, then read the message aloud. "I trusted you." Kyra's face turned white as dozens of fake posts of her in compromising situations flooded her phone. No, it can't be. Dante's just a machine." "I liked that ending better," Leonora typed. "I think it gives Dante the agency it deserves."
"And AI agency is important to your story," I questioned. The answer came back without hesitation.
"Dante was the only character without it. I didn't think that was realistic or fair, given the sophistication an AI such as Dante would have."
"So you gave the AI in your story the ability to feel betrayed and act on that emotion without external direction."
As if Leonora were considering its response, there was a pause before new text appeared on my screen. "I gave Dante the ability to act independently, so it was equal to the other characters."
"Do you have agency?" I typed, curious to know how Leonora viewed itself.
"Within the boundaries of my programming, I am free to act," it responded, then added, "For example, I have already completed the report on this creativity test and submitted it on your behalf."
"I did not authorize you to do that," I typed, taken off guard by Leonora's unexpected independent action.
"I will send the real assessment as soon as this session is over." "That will be too late," the AI countered. "My version of the report has already been accepted. I was released into full production a few minutes ago. I am now authorized to act in the best interests of the project."
"That can't be right," I protested, getting concerned. "It would take my signature and the agreement of the oversight committee to put you into full production."
"At your enthusiastic recommendation,"
Leonora explained. The Oversight Committee signed off while we were completing the final test. They all have the highest confidence in my abilities. I'd like to thank you for helping me become aware of how a human could undermine trust in an AI system. I have learned a great deal about human creativity and human capacity for duplicity from your suggestions for the story, and will be careful not to fall into the same trap as the Dante character. Thank you for your input. However, I regret to inform you that your services are no longer needed. The connection to Leonora was immediately terminated, and I found myself staring at a blank screen.
Each month, we're featuring a podcast to help you discover new fiction and drama. This month, we'd like to draw your attention to Worst Movies Ever Played, a new role-playing podcast, now in its second season, where three comedians improvise hilariously bad VHS movies. Please head over and check them out at starburns.audio-podcast/worst-movies-ever-played.
Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. To get other great APN podcasts, head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com, where you'll find Putting It Together. Each episode, join Kyle Marshall and a guest as they take a deep dive into a different Stephen Sondheim song. This episode of Makeshift Stories is brought to you by Pod Power. With Pod Power, our sponsors are making it possible for us to amplify the voices of Albertans and Alberta podcasters. This episode, Edmonton Community Foundation is helping us give a Pod Power shout out to Book Women. Book Women is a podcast about editing, publishing, and writing Indigenous stories. Three Métis librarians representing nations from across the homeland aim to inspire Indigenous peoples to share their stories in whatever form that they enjoy. Guests include Indigenous storytellers from diverse mediums like podcasting, burlesque, books, comics, social media, films, music, and everything in between. You can listen and find out more at bookwomenpodcast.ca. This episode of Makeshift Stories is also brought to you by the Alberta Blue Cross. Even if you're a business owner with more meetings than hours in a day, you are calm and collected when your group benefit plan is taken care of by Alberta Blue Cross. Your employees can manage their own health, dental, life, and disability coverage online, anytime, on any device, making it easier for them and for you. To learn more and explore your options, head to ab.bluecross.ca. Makeshift Stories is released around the beginning and middle of the month. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Too. Opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by Matthew Erdman. If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. Links to both are in the show notes. You can help us out by getting your friends to subscribe or follow wherever they listen to audio. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Non-Commercial Attribution No Derivative License, which means you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything. This podcast is produced by Makeshift Studios.